Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO, EO, EO 11, EO 11, EO 11. A dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of folding green, EO11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 84 years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11.
Okay. I got to figure something out here. Wasn't supposed to be this way. The main microphone is not working yet again. And I'm suspecting that it is something in my general bailiwick as to what the deal is here. And we're going to find out. We're going to find out anyway. James Bostic saying, do not pay the guard. Or no, do not pay the ransom. I killed the guard and escaped. Good to be here with you yet again with technical difficulties reigning supreme. Well, better my show than Gary's. So what we're going to do here, I'm going to stay on the speakerphone. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stay on the speakerphone because we have that connection. I'm going to end this call. No, we're not going to end the episode. We're going to continue. So don't give me that. Moogly moogly, dude, okay? And we're going to go to another browser. This happens sometimes. I can't account for it. I don't know why. But I noticed this last week when we were having microphone troubles. I thought it was Blog Talk, and I was busting hard on them, but it apparently wasn't Blog Talk. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to log in over here on this other browser. Normally, I use Mozilla, and Mozilla works fine. It has for many, many years. And then the last couple times I tried to use Mozilla, well, things didn't turn out so hot. And I'm not exactly sure why, but we had trouble. And then I went into my settings box a week before last and tried to figure out, you know, just what in the hell is going on, and wasn't able to do it. and I'm not real sure why, and that's very distressing to me. I thought I had it fixed because the next time we were on the air, things worked fairly well. But then, you know, then we took a week off, and I thought everything was totally cool. And then we come back, and we got this problem.
Which is kind of frustrating. But we worked through it. And that's what we're going to do right here. Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. I think I've got this song. Now, I'm going to come back over here.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I bet you can.
All right. That's all we needed. Sweet.
Let me go ahead and mute this. Now, as I was saying... James Mossick, a conservative perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Finally, man, it's good to be here with you. Like I told you earlier, and I don't know if you heard it or not because I had to switch over to the speaker front. Are we good? I'm guessing we're good. Don't pay the ransom. I killed a guard and escaped. I took the entire week off last week. The entire week. So here's what for the last few years, my brother and I have lifted weights 3 days a week, and he was going on vacation last week, and I could have gone over to the field house and went by myself, but I thought, you know what? I'm just going to take, it's only 2 days anyway, because it's Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. So it's not like I was laying off this ridiculous amount of time. I said, no, I'm not going to go. And Monday morphed into Tuesday. And we've had absolutely fantastic, gorgeous, beautiful, perfect, idyllic summertime weather here in the Mountain State. The last couple of days, the temperature's been in the upper 80s, low 90s with a heat index, moving up into the mid 90s. I mean, it's just been beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I've been sitting out in the sun a lot. And that particular day, it was just stunning, fantastic. And you know what? I'm not doing it, man. I'm not going to do a show tonight. I'm just not. So I didn't, and it was awesome. And then Wednesday turned into Thursday, and this is getting pretty good to me, so I don't think I'm going to do a show tonight either. So I took the entire week off. I didn't lift. I didn't do radio. I didn't do anything until Sunday when I did the recorded version of the program, which airs 4 p.m. Eastern Time Sundays on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be. The very, very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. Wow. But it's just been idyllic. It's just been fantastic. And I was just thinking the other day, here in West Virginia, in the particular county, you know, that I work at in the school system, our last day of school, you know, they dictated to us, was March 13th. It was Friday 13th, March 13th. So we had a couple weeks off in March, and then April comes along, and the weather is fundamentally mild. And those last 2 weeks in April, last 3 weeks, you know, there were a lot of days where the temperature was in the mid 60s, low 70s. I was out here. I was out back. I have a chair that I'm exceptionally fond of. Got it at Sam's. It's this hammock chair, and it's like a chair and it's like a hammock. And that's all. I'm not going to get any more details than that because it's technical. But anyway, and that's my favorite chair. I love it. I've had one for a couple of years. I wore one out. Now I'm on my second one, but it's just this fantastic chair. And I would get out there and I would start sunning myself. And basically every day that there has been sunshine since third week of April, I've been out in it. I've been sitting in the sun day after day after day after day. We had 1 week there about the second week in June where it was nothing but rain. It was overcast and it was nothing but rain. And it was beginning to affect me psychologically. And that is no joke. I was really addicted to the sunlight, but that's all I've done. Whatever needed doing around here, dotting I's and crossing T's periodically in terms of housework that needed to be done or yard work that needed to be done, and a couple here and there projects and washing the car, just simple, stupid little things. I have had it awesome. And, you know, I think about how blessed I've had it when I think about good example, and he's overdue to come on. As a matter of fact, I'm going to call him tomorrow. Our friend, Michael Cutler, living up in New York. You know, he was in one of the most draconian lockdowns in the country. And then after the pandemic scourge moves away, you've got the Black Lives Matter and the Antifa people and lawlessness. And he's right in town. He's in Brooklyn. And you know, when we ask him about it, he's going to say he's getting along just fine and he's doing great. And he probably is because he's a tough guy. But the things that he has had to contend with, I have had none of at all. Really. And I think, man, because, you know, all during those early days of the pandemic and everybody's screaming bloody murder about this and that, and you need a mask, you don't need a mask, go on a cruise, no, you better not. Wear a mask when you hook up with people, but and you can get it. You can get it on the table. You can get it on your hands. It only travels 6 feet. You know, you take the experts, and we're going to get into that because I got another burr in my blanket over a meme I saw last week. Harry Truman once said of economists, if you laid them end to end, they would point in all different directions. And I think that that assessment is probably true with our vaunted epidemiologists. And I've gone back and I've looked, and I mean, almost every important seminal point that we have been told about the Rona, you know, they've said and then they've backed every damn thing. They've said and they've backtracked, or they've said and they've backtracked and then they've come back to where they were. Last week, the CDC announced that looking at the mortality rates as they have dropped so significantly and the projected drop in the mortality rate, we can't call this a pandemic anymore because it's barely comparable with the flu in terms, let me qualify this, in terms of mortality. Yeah, there are cases. And I can guarantee you there are going to be cases. There are going to be these little spikes, these little flare-ups, these little surges, whatever you want to call them, these little incidents when school starts back where you're going to have the Rona show up. Now, a lot of people are shrugging their shoulders and they're going, well, what's the big deal, man? It's not something that wreaks havoc on kids unless you got a child with some respiratory issues or some immune system deficiencies. So, and that's true. All right. Kids are invincible. Believe me, I watch them. Grubby, grimy, nose picking, eyeball rubbing, getting the wax out of their ear, running through their hair, coming up and hugging me. Nasty little fart blossoms. So yeah, I know, believe me, I know, I see it all the time. But these children, the large measure of them, have remarkable immune systems. By God, they do. They really do. And yeah, they get sniffles, they get sick, they get a little croupy, and then it's gone. But the and anyone who says, you know what, September 3rd or whenever it is in West Virginia, it's going back old school. So we're not going to go back until after Labor Day, which I'm digging because and, you know, and we're still going to have that same schedule. However, everybody, you know, get them on the bus. I guarantee you, the first day of school at Shady High School, we will have children in that school who have never registered. Because mom and dad said, get on that bus and go to school. Don't let me see you come back here till 2:30. And I'm in full agreement with that. I am. I'm in full agreement with that because it's time. It's time to go back to school. That's all there is to it. We probably shouldn't have dismissed when we did. At least in my opinion, I think that we were so close. You know, we only had a few more weeks at the end of school anyway. Let that herd immunity build. Let that herd immunity build with these kids. But the problem is not the kids. Now, we know the folks who are the most at risk, the demographics that are the most at risk in terms of mortality from the Rona. Isn't that right, Nipsey? Yeah, I haven't forgotten about you, Mario, Andrew, Fred, which one? Nipples Cuomo. I'm not going to call him Nipsey because that's an insult to Nipsey Russell, a brilliant orator and a remarkably funny man. But here's the thing, and that's why we killed so that's why Cuomo killed so many of our grandparents, our aunts and uncles, our moms and dads in the nursing homes. They're close to over 6,000 now, over 6,000 senior citizens were condemned to death by that son of a bitch, Andrew Cuomo. Absolutely it was. But there are a lot of grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles, moms and dads living at home with these kids. So, yeah, Bosco gets a little dose of the Rona from rubbing snotty noses with grimy little Rosie, and he gets a dose, and then he takes it home. But at home, we got Grandma Francie. And Grandma Francie smoked a lot. Matter of fact, Grandma's got, you know, she got a nebulizer these days. And then Grandma gets the Rona. Grandma has a close shave. Grandma doesn't make it. Maybe that shave was just too close, and Grandma gives up the ghost. Well, you know what's going to happen. We live in a remarkably litigious society. And it is at a time when it is advantageous to the litigants, to those who sue, because a lot of boards of education will cave. And there may be an incident where this happens. That's going to be regrettable when it does. But we got to open up. We got to open up. This has been awesome, and like I said, I've been blessed living all, you know, every West Virginian has been blessed, and we bitch about Governor Justice because he's a stooge, but you know he's trying to do what he can do, and he's like a lot of, well, the governorship was his, bought and paid for, and that's you know, like a lot of governorships and a lot of political offices are. I'm sure he did it nice and legal. I can guarantee you he probably hasn't paid any damn taxes on it, if there were taxes to pay. He's probably delinquent on those. But we've been really lucky here. They did a much better job protecting our nursing home residents and our nursing home population. But the folks who have passed away from it, and I think at this stand right now, at this time right now, we still have less than 100 deaths in the state of West Virginia. And we haven't had any new deaths, I think, in the last 3 days, 4 days. Uh-oh. We just had the power flicker, and I am hoping that I... Oh, yeah, we're still on the air. Good deal. And to be fair, our population is not as densely compacted as what you have in, major cities in New York or in New Jersey or Massachusetts, which, by the way, those are the top three states in terms. Those three states, the nursing home deaths alone in New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts comprise almost 46% of all coronavirus deaths nationally. My grandparents, our aunts and uncles, our moms and dads. But poor Mike and those guys up there, the lawlessness that's been going on with Antifa and BLM this transcends incompetency. It meant from an administrative standpoint. What de Blasio is doing. And the same thing with Nipples, both those guys. And the same thing with Snagglepuss over there in New Jersey. What's his name? Murphy, Phil Murphy. And I don't even know who the bastard is in Massachusetts. But these three states alone, because of their policies, New York leading the way, followed up by Jersey and by Massachusetts. Comprise almost half the national death toll. Excuse me. Almost half the national damn death toll. California played a role. So did Oregon. So did Washington State. So did Colorado. So did Virginia. So did Michigan. Lots of aunts and uncles and grandparents and moms and dads. I wonder how many of them were black. I wonder who's going to turn over a cop car and poop on that, for the black grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles and moms and dads. No, nobody will. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody. They'll do that for George Floyd. They'll do that for Rashawn Brooks or Rashawn Parker. But they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it for Grandma and Grandpa. They're not going to do it for Zachariah Williamson either. They finally made an arrest there. I think the guy turned himself in, but then pled not guilty. What in the world? You turn yourself in, and then you go plead not guilty at the arraignment. Of course, I guess that's his right. He can do that. But probably nothing's going to happen to the dude. This will be backpedaled and washed away, and at some point, he'll be taken from his cell and he'll be granted bond pending trial. And then it's just nothing's ever going to happen. And little Zachariah Williamson will be just as dead as she was the night he killed her. Kind of a random stream of consciousness tonight, and that's okay too. So the Democrats are burning cities. Nothing has changed. I took a week off. I could have spent that week in space. I could have been in orbit for the last 6 days and come back, and nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. Matter of fact, getting a little bit worse. The Democrats burning cities, literally. Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle, New York, the District of Columbia, Chicago. In Chicago, everybody is either shooting or getting shot. It has gotten to the point, I think it were like 1,000 people shot and 30 of them died. It's some ridiculous number. And every week, it's bigger. It's like Powerball. It's like, murder Powerball. And this week, the Powerball is going to be up to 2,500 shot, 1,200 fatally. And it's not, and naturally it's Donald Trump's fault. It's Donald Trump's fault, according to Lori Lightfoot. And where is Black Lives Matter? Nowhere to be found. Does anyone know of any Black Lives Matter representation being, you know, of them making a presence in Chicago to talk to all these angry gun packing young brothers that are out there wasting the hell out of each other? And the problem is they don't care about collateral damage either. These gangs, these thugs, they don't care if they accidentally kill a 10-year-old kid or a 75-year-old grandfather or a 32-year-old mama, working mom. It doesn't mean anything any more than it means anything when innocent people are killed and murdered in these Black Lives Matter Antifa things, or they're attacked or set on fire. It's collateral damage is totally acceptable. The end justifies the means. So a couple of kids had to die. We got what we wanted. We overthrew the country. So what? Grandma was, she was 75. She's going to die any day anyway. And there is an inexhaustible supply of 32-year-old working moms. That's how they see it. They're not going to tell you that. They're gonna, you know, it's all comrade and World Workers Union, and together we're gonna unite and beat up on Secretariat. No, excuse me, the proletariat, not Secretariat. It is a racehorse, but you get the idea. All right. So then, and so the cities are on fire. And Joe Biden stews in the basement. I don't know if you guys heard this or not. This is, what was it, Biden cracks, I think is what I got to listen to. Earlier this, I guess it was Sunday, he was on he was doing the Sunday shows. And this is one of the things, I've been taking a lot of heat for this because, the old man's mind is gone. And he's the Democrat nominee for president. And they got to try and sell this to the bitter end. And I mean, he can't even get through a scripted 30-second soundbite. Oh, my God. Anyway, this is from a CBS affiliate on Sunday, one of the morning shows.
I want to ask.
Dick, what's with this guy?
Steve, that's our time.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much to Mr. Vice President as well.
Thank you. I hope I can see you again. Thank you.
What?
I want to ask.
Dick, what's with this guy?
Steve, that's our time.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much to Mr. Vice President as well.
Thank you. I hope I can see you again. Thank you.
I'm reminded of Max Headroom. Does anybody know who Max Headroom is? Or was, rather. He was, it was an iconic thing in the 80s. He was, Matt Frewer, the actor Matt Frewer, was the guy that played him. And Max was, he was a digital identity. And he was, he broadcast from the ether. He was, animated. He wasn't real. Of course he was. And they did all this digital makeup and stuff on him. But that's what Biden reminds me of. He's like Max Headroom, but there ain't nothing up in the head, man. I mean, he's just, whew. And so what happens in the video, he's talking, he's, this guy's sick, what's he doing? And then it cuts. There's some kind of screen saver comes up. You can't see Joe Biden anymore. And the aide says, I'm afraid that's all the time we got, Kurt. And then the guy says, oh, well, okay, because he was clearly not expecting this. And then they cut back to Biden, and he's sitting there, and I guess they reset him. They put in a new flash drive in the back of his skull, and they were able to get, the coherent four words out of him before they took him. This guy is going to have to debate Donald Trump. You understand? This cat is going to have to debate Donald Trump. Now I'm going to be like my man Cutler. We've talked for about 30 minutes all over everything. Now I'm going to tie it up. Okay. What does Biden's declining mental orbit, his decaying mental orbit, have to do with COVID? Well, it's like this. They have to have the COVID. They got to have the hype. And that's what a lot of this is, okay? Because without the COVID hype and the panic, it's going to make it that much tougher for Democrats to try to achieve the mail-in voting that they so desperately want. And they need it in the key battleground states in order to control the outcome of the election. Without the COVID-19 panic, Democrats can't shut down rallies and the political campaigning efforts of the president, which they are also likewise desperately needing to do in key battleground states. Without the COVID-19, Democrats can't block the campaign contrast, the stark contrast between a vital, active President Trump and a physically tenuous, mentally compromised challenger, Joe Biden. Without the COVID-19 panic, Democrats don't have an excuse for canceling the convention in Milwaukee. And by doing that, blocking Team Bernie Sanders from some really visible opposition while protecting candidate gibberish from himself. See, I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're still kicking around this ridiculous virtual convention nonsense. But this would be a time, this would be a great time for Bernie and the Bernie bros to come in and agitate and point out just how clearly Joe has gone, just how far gone he is. Now, I know that the Biden campaign and Bernie Sanders working together and looking at commonality on certain issues, and, you know, Bernie's going to be, he's going to be a heavy influence, a heavy socialist influence, just like old girl Cortez. Ocasio-Cortez. Without the COVID-19 panic, Democrats have no mechanism to keep voters isolated one from the other, thus limiting communication and national debate, which would be adverse to the Democrat interest. The COVID-19 panic pushes this very important national conversation into the digital spaces, where people like Jack Dorsey at Twitter and Zuckerberg at Facebook control every element of the conversation. Without the COVID-19, the Democrats can't keep their blue state economy shut down, as we have seen for 5 months now, and continue to stymie United States economic growth. Because a good economy, a thriving economy anywhere, all thriving economies go fundamentally against the political interests of the left. And of course, without the COVID, Democrats can't keep Joe Biden sealed up in the basement, where again, the electorate will not be exposed to the visible. And I would say by the time they get him out, because he's been on a wrap for months now, by the time they get him out, I'm just wondering how far his dementia has progressed. Now, you know he's got handlers, obviously. He's got cats looking out for him right now, trying to cover all this stuff. But at some point, he's going to have to face somebody. He's going to have to make an address at the convention, if they have one. If they don't have one, he doesn't have to make a keynote address, does he, or an acceptance speech, right? He can do that. You know, they can they can put together a Joe Biden word bank and select all the words that he's ever, you know, just find recordings of everything he's ever said. And that's what it would sound like. And just do a speech with a picture of him on the screen. Without COVID-19 panic, it becomes tougher and tougher for guys like Jack Dorsey at Twitter and Zuckerberg to censor voices that will and are outlining this fraud, this scheme. Under the cover of the COVID, they have a better method. They have a better excuse for trying to do that. Every one of these things I've talked about, and a lot more, we're gonna knock it off with that. These are strategic outcomes that the Democrats are counting on, and every single one of them are based on this manufactured weaponizing of the Rona. And they've weaponized it to use it to achieve a larger political objective. Because there is no benefit to anyone, not you, not me, not anybody anywhere except Democrats when it comes to all this hype. And it's been overwhelming hype on COVID-19. Nothing is organic. Nothing is coincidental. It is not coincidental, by the way, that corporate media are all in to facilitate this fear, this demanded fear by the Democrats that they have to have in order to accomplish their nefarious schemes. So you have this alignment of Hydra, the deep state, Hollywood, and the establishment media and various and sundry multinationals and globalists who support the same agenda. So again, nothing coincidental. Everything. I just don't know. I look at this stuff and I think, how can the country be so blind? Why isn't, and we are starting to see stuff, and we are starting to see stirrings and pushback on this, this Antifa BLM crap. And I think to myself, I never thought it would, and I'm still about halfway hoping that it won't, but I become more and more fearful every day that it's going to have to come down to some form, and I'm loath to say it, some form of armed conflict. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your philosophy is on it. None of those things matter. Because I think in large measure, most people are like us. And, you know, they want to be left alone. They want to work. They want to provide for their kids, their family. They don't want to be taxed too much. They want to, you know, make their associations. They want to move about their world and you know, with at a minimum of government interference. And it's those of us who just want to be left alone. It's those of us, when we get involved, that are going to become a fearsome thing to see. I really think that. Because when it gets to the point that I've got to go get up out of my hammock chair, and I've already made very clear how attached I am to that piece of outdoor furniture. If I've got to get up out of my hanger chair and I got to go get a shotgun, I'm going to use it. If you're going to make me go to all this trouble to strap up and get everything lined out, yeah, I'm going to, because that crap's heavy. 20 rounds of buckshot, semi-automatic shotgun. It's heavy. 45 caliber pistol that weighs 2 pounds empty and 3 magazines. Same thing for a carbine and 220 round 45 caliber. Yes, if I've got to get all this crap together and go out there and see what's going on and make sure you guys knock it off. Yeah. I'm locking bolts back. I'm charging weapons. I'm pulling triggers. And I'm not a guy that's easily moved to violence. I'm a live and let live kind of dude. I'm a teddy bear. And there's a million guys out there like that, just like me. Just want to be left alone. And when they got to get up out of their hammock chairs and go get their crap on and go out here and talk to these knotheads forcefully, it's going to be bad. I'm serious. I don't know what – the Democrats are doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on this. I have told you for weeks now, as the summer progresses, it's just going to get worse. Have you seen anything improve? Well, no. What do you think it's going to be like after Trump gets reelected? You think he's going to go home? Go back to Starbucks? Drown their sorrows in a couple of Loco Chaca lattes? I don't know. Whatever they... Coffee with jizz all over it. I mean, whatever they drink. No, they're not going to do that. They're going to get even madder. They're going to become even more deranged. They're going to become even more agitated. And what's going to happen when Sherman, General Sherman, took his men, he convinced Grant, let me take my men. Let me take my men and go through Georgia to the sea and then to South Carolina. I will make Georgia howl. And he did. And the doctrine was this. Think about this. From Atlanta, I think it's 60-some miles, whatever it is, from Atlanta to the sea, Savannah, a swath through Georgia, I think it was 5 miles wide, laid waste. Farms and plantations were burned. Fences were torn down. Livestock acquisition, along with a lot of silver. Furniture was burned. There was nothing. Nothing left. Scorched earth. The reason behind this, Sherman said, was the intention to visit war so terrible and so horrible and so awful on the people of the South that they would never again wish for it for more than 100 years. My God, he was right. That's what happened. Of course, William Tecumseh Sherman's not really a name you bandy about to happily in the South. They're not really big fans of his down there. And rightly so. But the point is, when we have to do something, and I guess we're going to have to, when we do, we're going to have to strike hard, and we're going to have to strike swift, and we're going to have to make it so bad, we're going to have to give them such a bloody nose, we're going to have to give them such a massive punch in the mouth that they just stop cold thinking about what's coming next and want nothing more to do with it. Hopefully forever, but definitely for a long, long time. That's how, and people are going to get hurt. And that's another thing that scares me. People have already gotten hurt. People have lost their lives. more people are going to get hurt.
And I don't know of any other way that this can be done.
I really don't. Well, tell you what, we're going to go ahead and take a little break here in just a second. I'm really kind of surprised that we got everything lined out pretty good as far as all the crap. That's just crazy stuff with the mic going bad. But anyway, everything's working now, and we're happy about it. So we'll be back with more of ACP right after this.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mugging around. Oh, ooby-doo, I want to be like you. I want to walk like you, talk like you. You see it's true. And they like me can learn to be human too.
A deal with you. What I desire is man's red fire to make my dream come true. Now give me the secret, man cub. Come on, clue me what to do. Give me the power of man's red flower so I can be like you.
The greatest, without a doubt, the greatest Disney song of my generation, anyway, I think, really. Louis Prima, Phil Harris, ew, yeah, that was just fantastic. Anyway, James Boss, what's going on?
One more thing before we go tonight. Since this show began almost 4 years ago, I've really tried not to talk about myself on the air or even use the first person pronoun. The last thing this country needs is more narcissism. It's not very interesting anyway. People who use the word I a lot tend to bore everyone but themselves. But tonight we're going to make an exception to that rule. We don't have much choice. Last week, the New York Times began working on a story about where my family and I live. As a matter of journalism, there is no conceivable justification for a story like that. The paper is not alleging we've done anything wrong, and we haven't. We pay our taxes. We like our neighbors. We've never had a dispute with anyone. So why is the New York Times doing a story on the location of my family's house? Well, you know why. To hurt us. To injure my wife and kids so that I will shut up and stop disagreeing with them. They believe in force. We've learned that. 2 years ago, a left-wing journalist publicized our home address in Washington. A group of screaming Antifa lunatics showed up while I was at work. They vandalized our home. They threatened my wife. She called 911 while hiding in a closet. A few weeks later, they showed up again at our house. For the next year, they sent letters to our home threatening to kill us. We tried to ignore it. It felt cowardly to sell our home and leave. We'd raised our kids there in the neighborhood, and we loved it. But in the end, that's what we did. We have four children. It just wasn't worth it. But the New York Times followed us. The paper has assigned a political activist called Murray Carpenter to write a story about where we are now. They've hired a photographer called Tristan Spinski to take pictures. Their story about where we live is slated to run in the paper this week. Editors there know exactly what will happen to my family when it does run. I called them today and I told them, but they didn't care. They hate my politics. They want this show off the air. If one of my children gets hurt because of a story they wrote, they won't consider it collateral damage. They know it's the whole point of the exercise, to inflict pain on our family, to terrorize us, to control what we say. That's the kind of people they are. They'll deny this, of course. They'll claim it's just journalism, just the facts. Really? So how would Murray Carpenter and his photographer Tristan Spinski feel if we told you where they live, if we put pictures of their homes on the air? What if we publicized the home address of every one of the soulless robot editors at the New York Times who assigned and managed this incitement to violence against my family? What about the media editor, Jim Windolf? We could do that. We know who they are. Would that qualify as journalism? We doubt they'd consider it journalism. They'd call it criminal behavior if we did it. And that tells you everything.
Terrific guy. Smart guy. And that's not all, incidentally, that's happening. The Democrats, they are obsessed. Well, they're obsessed with a lot of things. They're obsessed with power. The left is obsessed with power. They're obsessed with cultivating, acquiring, and maintaining ever larger amounts of power. But they're also, and they're obsessed with sex. Look what they did to Brett Kavanaugh. Look what they do every time, you know, Clarence Thomas, Brett Kavanaugh, two excellent examples right there. You know, they bring out these nebulous, sketchy, shadowy, squirrely women who, you know, almost in light of how easily their stories can be debunked, they're believed all the more so. Two women now, Jennifer Eckhart, who worked for Fox, and Kathy Areu, A-R-E-U, Areu, who was an occasional guest on the show, filed a lawsuit in federal court, and they are accusing Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Howard Kurtz, John O'Caldwell, and Ed Henry of a wide range of alleged sexual misconduct. The accusations against Henry, whom Fox fired earlier in July, are especially extreme, accusing him of violent rape. On the other side of the spectrum, the accusations against Carlson are ridiculous, and it's these charges that are what we're getting ready to talk about. Specifically, Areu accuses Carlson of ordering his employees to hold her in a chair so that he could solicit her for sex. Then when she rebuffed him, He dumped her as a guest. And when you get to the details, and you can go to, where did I find this at? American Thinker. It's over at American Thinker, and it was published, I think, today by Andrea Widberg. And you can, it's all libited and footnoted. But it's ridiculous. She alleges, Ariu says, that she was a frequent guest on Tucker Carlson's show, appearing at least 17 times in 2018. Her last appearance was in December 2018. After she completed her segment, she contends that one of Mr. Carlson's producers or writers whispered in Miss Ariu's ear while she was on set trying to get out of the chair and told her that Mr. Carlson wanted her to stay until the very end of the show to chat with him. The complaint implies that Ariu desperately wanted to avoid this little chat, but she could not. Instead, she had no choice because she was attached to the chair. Instead, she had no choice because she was attached to the chair. Oh, my God. Tucker Carlson is using bondage to keep his guests trapped on the set. No, that's not it. She had a microphone on that ran through the chair, and she wore an earpiece, and the tech crew refused to take it off. Now, I'm not sure how stout those cables are on mics and headpieces for TV news shows, but I think if you really wanted to get away, couldn't you just unclip your microphone and take the earbud out? Next, Carlson changed his clothes in front of Ariu, except he didn't. He changed on the set into his leather jacket for the annual Christmas party, where he told Ariu he planned to make a quick appearance. After all this, finally, the backstory here, we get to the real allegation, which was fundamentally Carlson propositioned Ariu, except that's not what really happened either. According to Ariu, Carlson, hardly making any effort to hide his intentions, told her he was staying at a hotel in New York City that night without his wife or children, without question. Ariu alleges Mr. Carlson was probing to see whether Miss Ariu was interested in a sexual relationship. I mean, go take a look at this girl, Ariu. She's a cute kid, but apparently has an ego that is boundless. And the reason they're doing this is what? Now, again, you know, we have to. We just have to nod our heads at this, because I got a feeling it's going to be like every other sexual harassment hoax that's put in place by the left against people like Tucker Carlson, who is a very dangerous man in their eyes. Now, I don't, you know, none of us really know what his private life's like, what his work habits are, but he's going to have a pretty strong work ethic to get where he is. You know, and they've got him in O'Reilly's slot. Okay, O'Reilly was the king. And now Tucker Carlson is there. I mean, he's doing better than Hannity. 4 million people tuning into his show. CNN can't scrape together 1 million people at any time during the damn day. Same thing with MSNBC, ABC, CBS, all those news, Fox for that matter. I mean, he's killing. And he's dangerous because people listen to Tucker Carlson. 4 million people listen to Tucker Carlson. They watch his show. Well, we can't have any opposing viewpoints here. We just can't. We're not going to. So they threaten his family. Think about this. They know what they're doing. They understand full well that the potential for physical violence by doxing and doing this piece on, you know, his home and where he lives, his family and everything, they know what's going to happen. They know why they're doing that, and they know what's going to happen. Again, they don't care. They do not care. And you also know that there are people out there violent enough, crazy enough, imbalanced enough to think that they were making a very strong political point, that they were delivering a very, very, very serious political message if they were to go and beat on his wife, set fire to his house. Rough up his kids. The New York Times knows this. It is their intent. I guess you guys heard what happened in Denver over the weekend. Michelle Malkin got attacked. They were doing a pro-police rally in Denver. And they're walking down, you know, through the crowd, and they're getting ready to go up to the dais and speak. And it's music, speakers, vendors. This is supposed to be a family-friendly event. And the police chief, a guy named Paul Pazin, told the sponsor of the event, a guy named Randy Corporon, reschedule it. Or move it, because he was worried that his officers would be put in harm's way. No, I didn't make that up. The Denver police chief asked the sponsor of this pro-police event, a pro-police family-friendly event, to move it or postpone it because he's worried about his police officers being put in harm's way. This police chief also walked hand in hand with members of Black Lives Matter. So they come out, and they're coming through the crowd. And the anti-police faction, the BLM, the Antifa types, move through this crowd, you know, the spectators there to listen to the speakers, of which Michelle Morgan was one, and they have these spring-loaded batons, you know, you just whip them open, and so they start busting heads and swinging on people. And the police, the Denver police for whom this pro-police rally was being held, they did nothing. They did nothing. One of the organizers, a guy named Ron McLaughlin, was hit with a longboard. I don't know what that is. I guess it's a skateboard. And a bullhorn. They beat the hell out of him. And the cops didn't do anything. Eventually, they laid down tear gas, pepper ball deployments, but that was probably to cover themselves. That was to protect themselves. No arrests were made. No apprehensions were made. No chase was given. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. When those of us who want to be left alone get tired and have to get up. And I don't know what we do. I don't know what we do. I mean, they've sent, and I really like what they did in Seattle this weekend. Department of Homeland Security sent guys in. And unmarked vehicles. And they're wearing their riot gear. And they're clearly identified as law enforcement officers. And what they've done is over... The rioting in Seattle has gone on for 2 months. And what federal agents have been doing in the meantime, and they haven't been able to act, and they're not allowed because the mayor knows what they're doing. The mayor knows what she's doing here. They've been photographing. They've been videotaping, video recording the agitators who are committing the crimes, the guys with the torches, the guys with the hammers, the guys spray painting, the guys tearing stuff up. And they are identifying them. And once they have them identified, then they can file charges, issue warrants, and they can go arrest them. And that's what's going on. So they're going out there and, yeah, it's all fascist. They're just snatching these poor innocent people off the streets. No, 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 no. It's going to stick because they know who these people are. They've identified them. And so they're going and getting them. And some public radio, naturally, government subsidized, some public radio stay affiliate out there, and they're a public radio affiliate because they're left-wing liberal moonbats. And that format simply does not survive and cannot prosper in the free market because no one listens to it. Remember Air America? Well, nobody does. Not dead air, just getting a drink. It doesn't work. So this national government radio outlet over there, they paint the picture as though These kids are, you know, they're coming back from Bible study, and they just got finished helping this little old lady across the street when these jackbooted thugs from Donald Trump's stormtroopers snatched them up and tossed them into unmarked vans, taking them to concentration camps for torture and medical experiments. And that's just, it's not going to happen. But that's what they're painting it as, but that's not what's going on. Where are we at on time? During the Vietnam War, the CIA did a lot of stupid things. But one thing they did that was very smart, and we never knew about it until after the Vietnam War was concluded. The CIA had enacted a program called the Phoenix Program. And what the Phoenix Program did, it used guys, you know, used Green Berets and Marine Recon and SEALs and those cats. And they would look at the villages in South Vietnam that were friendly and assisted and collaborated with the AVN or the ANV, the NVA, the Northern Vietnamese Army, the NVA. And they found the people in these little villages, in these little hamlets, who were providing money to the Viet Cong, who were providing food, munitions, equipment. Okay. So these were Viet Cong sympathizers. And it took a lot of work, but it took a lot of surveillance, but they found out who these people were. They identified them. So once they had their book, then they would send the special operations group people out, the SEALs, the Marine Recons, the operators. And these guys would go into the villages at night and they would kill these people. Just kill them. Take them away. You know, they didn't do it with a lot of hoopla, probably a lot of knives, probably a lot of garrotes, maybe some silenced pistols out in the jungle if they took them away from the village, and then just got rid of them. Just got rid of them. Sink their bodies into a river or something. You know, and it was just like they would wake up and this guy would be gone. Well, we don't know. He went to bed. Nobody saw him. We went to go look for him and he wasn't in his hut. And they never find him. And it was a very successful program, unbeknownst to the CIA. And they found out after the war that the Phoenix program seriously hamstrung the efforts of the North Vietnamese in South Vietnam. And the bombing campaigns, ArcLight, linebacker too, the B-52 strikes into North Vietnam and along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They were within days. We didn't realize it, but they were within days or weeks of fundamentally being bombed into submission. But we didn't have those kind of assessments on those programs, and so they were discontinued. But what they've done, what the feds have done here is a non-lethal form of the Phoenix program. They're finding the individuals who are the leaders, the standouts, the actors, they're identifying them, and they're taking them out. Now, obviously, they're not killing them, and they're not going to. These people are going to have federal charges filed against them. It's going to be very, very uncomfortable for them. Some of them are going to go to jail, hopefully, for a long, long time. Some of them, nothing's going to happen to. But maybe the experience, of finding out what could happen to you as a result of breaking federal law might be enough to move some of them back on the right path. I don't know. These cats are fairly well indoctrinated and they're not, they're committed to this. But it's like the president said in his 4th of July speech, there are people out here tearing up these statues and burning these cities and destroying. I mean, there's always going to be violence. Well, there's always going to be violence, but there's always going to be violence against property. There's always been violence against property. Anytime there's a riot, anytime these left-wing kooks get a weed up their O-ring, they gotta break something. But the violence is now moving from property, like trashing a car or setting fire to a Wendy's, to shooting 8-year-old little girls, to dragging people out of their cars and beating the hell out of them, to rolling up on people's houses. Now we got problems. Name a Democrat who is shocked and appalled at what's happening in these Democrat-controlled cities. Name a Democrat who has spoken critically to Antifa, to BLM, to the rioters. Not protesters, not demonstrators, rioters. What did Nancy Pelosi say the other day when these people tore down the statue of Christopher Columbus? What did she say? Well, people are going to do what they're going to do. People are going to do what they're going to do. And I guess that's the attitude that encourages homeless junkies to take a shit on a sidewalk right in front of a restaurant in San Francisco, and nobody can do anything to him or about it. People are going to do what they're going to do. Sorry, I really didn't. I've been kind of free and loose with the cuss words here lately. I'm gonna try and work on that. But sometimes I just get so frustrated with this stuff, and it just feels so good to roll that crap off the tongue. Oh, while I'm thinking of it, Cuomo. We don't have much time left. This clown, this murdering SOB. You know what he's doing? He's using Fauci. Fauci says that Cuomo and the people, the experts that we are told, that we are reliably informed that we must slavishly defer to, the experts in New York State did it right. They did everything right and hailed New York State and Nipples Cuomo as shining examples of how to deal successfully with this pandemic. No, I'm not making it up. That's what he said. And Cuomo's running with it. The death toll from nursing homes in the state of New York has exceeded 6,500. When you couple those deaths with the nursing home deaths in Massachusetts and New Jersey, who followed the identical protocols, exercised the identical mandates that Nipples Cuomo implemented, total up to almost half, a little short of half, of all coronavirus deaths in the United States. He did it right. Well, yeah, I guess if you're wanting to do a demographic cleansing in your state to get rid of all those folks, our grandparents, our aunts and uncles, our moms and dads. Yeah, he did almost everything right. Same thing for Phil Murphy. Bucktooth, son of a, and whoever the faceless, nameless wonder is in Massachusetts. These people knew what they were going to do to the nursing home populations of their respective states, and they did it anyway. They knew. Okay, these are the educated people that we're supposed to slavishly defer to. They knew what was going to happen. United States Naval Hospital ship USS Comfort, a month in New York Harbor, treated 3 people. It can house, It can treat 1,000 patients. They treated 3. The massive hospital that they built at the Javits Center, 97 people. Now, why were these people sent from hospitals to nursing homes? We know the lie, and I'm not even going to... We're not going to get into it. We know the lie that was told. As a matter of fact, you know what? We got a little bit of time. Let me... 3 people. USS hospital ship, 3 people. Here, let's see if this is it. I think this is it. Make sure it's not too hot. Well, doesn't seem like it's gonna hit. Another problem we've been having at Blog Talk from time to time. You go to play a clip and it don't play. Don't ask me, man. I just work here. Anyway, we're down to the last 4 minutes. The deal is he tried to blame it on red tape that, since that was a federal ship sitting in a state harbor, people from state hospitals couldn't be put on board the federal ship because something. So he sent them to nursing homes. And he told the nursing homes, you got to take them, and I'm going to tell you something else. You're not allowed to test them. You're not allowed to assess them to see if they've got the Rona. And they didn't. They couldn't. And in New York State alone, 6,500 at least, and that's the count now because it's gone up. It just keeps going up. 6,500 New York senior citizens died as a result of these conscious, willful intentional actions by the governor of New York and the state director of their board of health. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. I've got the papers, man. We've got the papers. The mandate that was sent down sits underneath Nipple's signature and the board of health guy. They're the New York director of the board of, state board of health. Killed him dead. And Fauci turns around and says that he did everything right. Lionizes the guy. Excuse me just a moment. Okay. Cuomo's going to try to run for president based on the reimagined heroic behavior and how he's going to try and turn himself into Giuliani. He's going to use this to be his 9/11. Except Giuliani was for real. Giuliani was doing what he needed to do for his city. Giuliani was the man. Nipples, not so much. But that's what he's going to try and turn this into. Okay, well, I'm about out of gas, so I think we're just going to end it here. You have been listening to A Conservative's Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we also have a program we do, a recorded version of the show, Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Mojo 5.0 Radio, mojo50.com. Go there and check it out. Outstanding programming, outstanding hosts. If you're not listening, you should be. You guys, good to be back. Even though it was a little shaky, but we made it through. I've enjoyed the opportunity to get... Thank you, Penelope. I've enjoyed tremendously the opportunity to talk to you. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow because that's Thursday. Taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. Bless America. We'll see you then.